lost. The sub-level corridor was a place of perpetual twilight, illuminated only by the sickly, flickering hum of caged emergency bulbs. Water dripped from a rusted overhead pipe, each drop echoing against the concrete with the rhythmic precision of a metronome. 50 yards down the hall, wedged tightly in the narrow gap between a stack of decommissioned ventilation ducts and the damp stone wall, Kale controlled his breathing. He had been crouched in the dark for 2 hours, his muscles screaming in protest, his eyes pressed against the rubber eye cups of a pair of high-powered military binoculars. His objective was the heavy steel door of the biological containment wing, the skunk farm. Carson had been very specific. Don't engage. Don't be seen. Just get the sequence. Kale wiped a bead of sweat from his brow, ignoring the biting cold of the subterranean air. Carson's words had taken root in his mind, twisting into something fearful and paranoid. She's locking us out. She's building an autocracy in the dark. A heavy metallic clunk echoed down the corridor. Kale froze, holding his breath. Through the magnified lenses of the binoculars, he watched the heavy steel door swing inward. Nicole Bennett stepped into the corridor. Even through the lenses, Kale was taken aback by her appearance. She looked like a ghost. Her skin was a translucent, sickly pale, stretched tight over the sharp angles of her cheekbones. She had changed into a clean black tactical uniform, but the neat clothing only accentuated the profound exhaustion radiating from her posture. Her eyes were sunken, shadowed by dark, bruising circles, and her movements were stiff, robotic. She looked entirely hollowed out. She turned to face the heavy door, pulling it shut until the latch caught. Then she reached for the electronic keypad mounted on the concrete wall. Kale adjusted the focus wheel on the binoculars, zooming in tight on her right hand. The red LED of the keypad illuminated her fingers. She punched the first key. 4, then the next, 72911. The light on the keypad blinked from green to a solid angry red. The deadbolts engaged with a heavy thud. Kale lowered the binoculars, committing the 6-digit sequence to memory. He waited in the shadows as Nicole turned and walked down the corridor toward the freight elevators, her boots dragging slightly against the concrete. She never looked back. She never noticed the man hiding in the dark. Once the distant grate of the elevator slammed shut and the mechanical whine of the lift faded upward, Kale reached to his tactical vest and unclipped his walkie-talkie. He pressed the transmit button twice. Click, click. A prearranged signal. A moment later, Carson's voice crackled softly through the earpiece. Talk to me. I have the code, Kale whispered into the radio. She just left. She's heading up to the surface. Excellent work, Kale. Carson's voice was smooth, vibrating with a suppressed electric thrill. Stay out of sight. I will let you know the second she steps into the auditorium. Once she is on the stage and all eyes are on her, you are to enter the skunk farm. Find out what she's hiding down there and report back to me immediately. Copy that, Kale said. He clicked the radio off, his eyes fixed on the red light of the keypad, waiting for the signal to breach her sanctuary. The main auditorium of the mountain base had been designed for military briefings. It was a massive, tiered amphitheater with rows of faded blue fabric seats sloping downward toward a wide wooden stage. The air inside always smelled faintly of old dust, floor wax, and the nervous sweat of 100 high-stakes meetings from a bygone era. Today, the room was packed to capacity. Almost every survivor living within the mountain and the newly secured valley had filed into the auditorium. The low, sustained roar of 300 people talking over one another filled the cavernous space. It was a sound born of profound anxiety. They were being asked to decide their own fate, to choose between the terrifying freedom of the wooden houses below and the suffocating, absolute safety of the stone walls above. On the stage, behind a heavy oak podium, a row of folding chairs had been arranged for the core leadership group. Sam sat in the center, his hands clasped tightly between his knees. He was wearing his clean tactical gear, looking every inch the capable leader Carson had been telling the people he was. To his left sat Ruby in her wheelchair, her face a mask of solemn, quiet dread. Next to her was Paul, nervously pushing his taped glasses up the bridge of his nose, and Walt, the elderly gardener, who looked thoroughly bewildered by the proceedings. To Sam's right sat Beverly, holding tightly to little Tommy's hand. Carson was not in a chair. He stood in the shadows of the wings, stage right, out of sight of the crowd. He held a walkie-talkie close to his chest, his eyes scanning the auditorium doors at the top of the tiered seating. Sam looked at his watch. 5 minutes past noon. He leaned over to Ruby. "Do you think she's coming?" he asked, his voice barely audible over the din of the crowd.
"If she has any sense left, she will," Ruby murmured, her eyes fixed straight ahead. "But I fear the girl we knew is lost in those tunnels, Sam."
Sam sighed a heavy, conflicted sound. He stood up, smoothing the front of his shirt, and walked to the podium. He tapped the microphone. A sharp squeal of feedback pierced the air, immediately silencing the massive crowd. Hundreds of faces turned toward the stage, looking up at him with a mixture of hope, fear, and desperate expectation.
"Thank you all for being here," Sam began, his voice echoing through the PA system.
He gripped the edges of the podium, projecting an authority he was only half sure he possessed.
"We're going to get started in just a few minutes. I know tensions are high. I know the last few days have been confusing. But I want to remind everyone why we are here today."
He paused, looking out over the sea of faces. He saw Big Jim standing near the back wall. He saw the families he had registered for the Valley Houses.
"We are here to listen," Sam continued. "We are here to have a civilized debate about our future. We are going to hear arguments for staying in the Valley, and we're going to hear the arguments for moving back inside the mountain. This isn't about taking sides. This is about survival, and what that word actually means to us now."
He took a breath, preparing to introduce the speakers. At the back of the auditorium, the heavy double doors swung open. The squeak of the hinges was loud enough to draw the attention of the back rows. Like a wave rolling toward the shore, heads turned row by row, until the entire auditorium was looking up the center aisle. Nicole Bennett stood in the doorway. A collective, palpable murmur rippled through the crowd. They had not seen her in days, not since her unhinged, screaming tirade in the valley streets. She had cleaned herself up. Her hair was pulled back into a tight, severe braid. Her uniform was spotless, but the cosmetic fixes could not hide the profound deterioration beneath. She looked fragile, her eyes dark and hollow, darting nervously across the faces of the crowd as if expecting an ambush. The aura of unshakable confidence that had defined her leadership was gone, replaced by a tight, brittle paranoia. She walked down the center aisle. The murmuring grew louder. It wasn't the respectful hum that usually accompanied her presence. It was the sound of a crowd passing judgment. Sam felt a sharp pang of sympathy, warring with his own frustration. He gestured toward the empty folding chair at the end of the row on the stage. Nicole mounted the short wooden stairs, refusing to make eye contact with Sam, Ruby, or anyone else. She walked stiffly to the chair and sat down, staring rigidly at the floorboards between her boots. Sam cleared his throat, leaning back into the microphone.
"Now that we're all assembled," he said, trying to steer the room back to order, "we will begin. Carson will present the case for maintaining our expansion into the valley. Afterward, Nicole will take the podium to explain why returning to the mountain is our safest course of action."
From the shadows of the wings, Carson smiled. He raised his walkie-talkie to his lips and pressed the transmit button.
"She's on stage," Carson whispered. "Go."
Deep in the earth, the red LED on the keypad blinked. Cale stepped out of the shadows. He reached out and punched the keys. 472-911.
The light turned green. The heavy deadbolts retracted with a loud, satisfying clunk. Kale pushed the heavy steel door open, raising his M4 rifle, the mounted flashlight, piercing the gloom. He didn't know what he expected to find. A cache of hoarded supplies? A secret communications array connecting her to remnants of the government? A map of safe zones she was keeping for herself? He stepped into the skunk farm, his finger resting lightly on the trigger guard. The stench hit him instantly, a foul, decaying odor that made his eyes water. He swept his flashlight across the concrete room. The beam hit the iron bars of a holding cage. Inside, a withered, gray-skinned corpse with a ruined jaw threw itself against the iron, gnashing its teeth in a silent, rabid frenzy. Kale flinched, stepping back. "Jesus!" He swept the light to the right. It caught the reflection of a stainless steel workbench, test tubes, pipettes, glass beakers. And then it caught the second cage. Sitting on a small cot behind the thick iron bars was a man. He was impeccably dressed in a pristine white lab coat, though his wrists were tightly bound with heavy plastic zip ties. The man raised a hand to shield his eyes from the blinding beam of the flashlight, but he did not look afraid. He looked mildly annoyed. "I don't suppose you brought the key?" Dr. Wilhelm Krenner asked dryly. Kale lowered the flashlight slightly, utterly dumbfounded. A hostage. Nicole had a hostage locked in a cage next to a zombie. Kale scrambled for his radio, his heart hammering in his chest. "Carson, Carson, come in." "I'm here, Kale," Carson's voice replied immediately. "What did you find? Talk to me." "It's a man," Kale stammered, keeping his rifle leveled at the cage. "She's got a man locked in one of the holding cages, and a biter in the other." "A man?" Carson's voice sharpened with intense, genuine surprise. This was better than he could have ever hoped for. "Ask him who he is." Kale stepped closer to the bars. "Who the hell are you? What are you doing in there?" Krenner looked at the scavenger, his brilliant sociopathic mind instantly calculating the angles. A man with a radio, a man sneaking into Nicole's private vault. The dynamic of the base was fracturing, and Krenner knew exactly how to drive a wedge into the crack. "My name is Dr. Wilhelm Krenner," he said, his voice calm, cultured, and dripping with manufactured victimhood. "I am a virologist, and I am being held here against my will." Kale keyed the radio. "Did you hear that, Carson?" "I heard it," Carson said. "Put the radio up to the bars, Kale. Let me talk to him." Kale stepped up to the cage, holding the walkie-talkie out so the speaker was near the iron. "Dr. Krenner?" Carson's voice crackled from the small speaker. "My name is Carson. Why did Nicole lock you in a cage?" Krenner let out a long, heavy sigh, the very picture of a broken, exhausted scientist. "Because, Carson, I was doing my job. I had spent the last year developing a vaccine for the necrotic pathogen, a cure. I was weeks away from finalizing a viable strain when Nicole Bennett abducted me." Kale's eyes went wide. "A cure?" "A cure?" Carson asked, his voice echoing Kale's shock, though his mind was already spinning the revelation into political gold. "If you were making a cure, why would she lock you up?" "She didn't lock me up to stop me from working, Carson," Krenner lied effortlessly, his voice taking on a dark, conspiratorial tone. "She locked me up to force me to change the work. She has been holding a gun to my head for days, forcing me to sequence the virus to alter its genetic structure." "Alter it?" Carson asked. "To do what?" "To make it resistant to my own vaccine," Krenner said softly. The silence that followed was absolute, save for the wet snapping of the zombie in the adjacent cage. "Why?" Carson finally asked, his voice barely a whisper. "Why in God's name would she do that?" Krenner stepped up to the bars, his eyes finding Kale's horrified face. "You strike me as a man of the world. Why does anyone want to keep a crisis going? To maintain a grip on power? To maintain control? If there is a vaccine, if the danger is largely removed, the people don't need the military anymore. They don't need the walls. They don't need her to keep them safe. A savior is only relevant as long as there is a threat to be saved from. Kale lowered the radio, staring at the doctor in absolute, sickening horror. It made perfect sense. It validated every dark whisper Carson had put in his ear. Nicole didn't want them in the valley because the valley represented freedom. She wanted them in the mountain so she could rule them. The radio crackled. Kale! Carson's voice was no longer a whisper. It was cold, hard, and utterly triumphant. Bring him to the auditorium, now! The people need to hear this. They need to know exactly what kind of monster is leading them. I can't, Kale said, looking at the heavy padlock securing the iron door. She didn't leave the keys. They must be on her belt. Then break it, Carson ordered. Kale didn't hesitate. He slung his rifle off his shoulder, racked the charging handle, and aimed the muzzle of the M4 directly at the heavy brass body of the padlock. He turned his head away and squeezed the trigger. The gunshot in the concrete room was deafening. Sparks showered the floor. The heavy brass lock shattered, fragments pinging off the walls. Kale kicked the iron gate open. Krenner stepped out of the cage, brushing a fleck of brass off his pristine white sleeve. He held out his zip-tied wrist with a polite, deferential smile. "I am entirely at your service, my boy," Krenner said. "Let us go shine some light on the truth." Up in the auditorium the crowd was utterly silent, hanging on Carson's every word. He stood at the podium, a masterful orator in his element. He didn't yell. He spoke with a passionate, earnest conviction that resonated in the chest of every exhausted survivor in the room. I ask you to look at yourselves, Carson projected into the microphone, sweeping his arm across the tiered seating. Look at the man sitting next to you. Look at the children in the front row. We are not animals. We are not meant to scurry into the dark and hide from the light of day. We are Americans, and even though the country fell, the spirit of what it means to be free did not die with it. A ripple of applause broke out in the middle rows. Sam watched Carson, feeling a swelling sense of pride. This is what leadership looked like. This was giving people hope. Nicole sat frozen in her chair, her eyes fixed on the floor. The words washed over her like static. She just wanted it to be over. She wanted to crawl back into the dark and sleep. We fought for that valley, Carson continued, his voice rising, building into a crescendo. We bled for it. And we will not let the dead dictate where we lay our heads at night. We will not let fear win. More applause, louder this time. Some people in the back were standing up. Carson smiled warmly, bathing in the adoration, but his eyes were fixed on the heavy double doors at the top of the center aisle. The doors pushed open. Kale walked in, his rifle slung low. Trailing a few steps behind him, his hands bound but his head held high, was Dr. Wilhelm Krenner. Carson's smile widened, sharpening into something lethal. He leaned back into the microphone. But staying in the valley is not our only concern today, my friends, Carson's voice suddenly shifted, losing its warmth, turning grave and conspiratorial. The applause died instantly. The crowd sensed the shift in tone. For a while now, Carson said, turning his head slowly to look directly at Nicole Bennett. Our leader, the woman who promises us safety in her mountain, has been up to something. Something that she has kept hidden in the deepest, darkest sublevels of this space. A secret that none of us were allowed to see. On the stage, the core group looked at each other in utter confusion. Paul frowned. Ruby gripped the wheels of her chair. Sam stood up from his seat, stepping toward the podium. Carson, what are you talking about? Nicole's head snapped up. The static in her brain vanished, replaced by a sudden, icy spike of adrenaline. I'm talking about the truth, Sam, Carson said into the mic, his eyes never leaving Nicole. I sent a team to breach Commander Bennett's private locked hideout, and what they found down there is deeply, profoundly concerning. Nicole's breathing hitched. Panic, primal and suffocating, seized her throat. She looked at Carson, then her eyes tracked past him, up the center aisle, to the back of the auditorium. She saw Kale, and then she saw the white lab coat. No! Nicole screamed. She leapt to her feet, the folding chair clattering backward onto the stage. It was a raw, panicked outburst that tore through the quiet auditorium. 300 heads whipped around, following her gaze to the back of the room. A collective gasp arose from the crowd as they saw Kale leading a bound stranger down the aisle. Carson stepped away from the podium, gesturing grandly with an open hand.
"Bring him down, Kale. Let the people see."
"Stop!" Nicole shouted, rushing toward the front of the stage, her hands trembling wildly.
"Sam, stop them! Don't let him speak!"
"Nicole, what is going on?" Sam demanded, grabbing her arm as she tried to move past him.
"Who is that?"
Carson stepped back up to the microphone.
"Ladies and gentlemen," he announced, his voice booming over the PA system. "This is Dr. Krenner, and he has a very interesting story to tell you."
"He's a liar!" Nicole shrieked, fighting against Sam's grip. Her panic was making her look entirely unhinged, exactly as Carson had hoped.
"Everything he says is a lie! Put him back in the cage!"
"A cage?" Paul repeated, his jaw dropping as he looked at Nicole.
"You kept a man in a cage?"
The murmuring in the crowd swelled into a chaotic, angry buzz. People were standing up, pointing, demanding answers. Carson turned to Nicole, his face a mask of stern, democratic fairness.
"You will have the opportunity to speak after we hear from the doctor, Nicole, but you will not silence him."
Nicole felt the world spinning violently off its axis. The walls of the auditorium were closing in. She watched with absolute paralyzing trepidation as Kale led Krenner down the wooden stairs and on to the stage. Krenner looked at her as he passed, flashing a microscopic, razor-thin smile that only she could see. He stepped up to the podium. The auditorium fell dead silent. Krenner leaned into the microphone.
"My name is Dr. Wilhelm Krenner," he said, his voice carrying the calm, authoritative timbre of a respected academic. "I am a virologist, and until a few days ago I was working on a vaccine for the necrotic pathogen that has destroyed our world."
The crowd erupted. The word vaccine hit them like a physical shockwave. Cries of disbelief, of sudden, desperate hope filled the air. Carson held up his hands, waving for quiet.
"Please, please, let the doctor finish."
Krenner waited for the noise to die down, his face a picture of tragic sorrow.
"I was on the verge of a breakthrough," he continued softly, "until I was ambushed by your commander. She took me by force. She dragged me into the lower recesses of this mountain, locked me in an animal cage, and forced me at gunpoint to alter my work."
"Why?" someone shouted from the front row.
"To mutate the virus," Krenner lied, his voice thick with rehearsed grief. "To engineer it to be entirely resistant to my vaccine."
The reaction was instantaneous. The murmur turned into a roar of outrage. People were pointing at Nicole, their faces twisted in horror and betrayal.
"He's lying!" Nicole screamed over the din, her voice tearing her vocal cords. "He made the virus! He ended the world! I was trying to force him to fix it!"
The others on stage were in a state of complete bewilderment. Sam released Nicole's arm, taking a step back from her, as if she were radioactive. Ruby put a trembling hand to her mouth. Carson stepped up next to Krenner, leaning into the mic.
"Let the doctor finish his testimony, Commander."
Krenner looked at Nicole, his eyes cold and dead.
"I did not make the virus, Nicole, but I know who did. In fact, everyone in this room should find the name Bennett very familiar."
He looked out at the crowd.
"This mountain was a DARPA facility, and the man who oversaw the bioweapons program here, the man who funded and unleashed this nightmare upon humanity, was Colonel Stephen Bennett, her father."
The silence that followed was absolute. It was the silence of a vacuum, sucking the air out of the room. Nicole let out a primal, animalistic scream. She lunged forward, throwing her entire body weight toward the podium, her hands hooked into claws, aiming for Krenner's throat.
"I should have killed you," she shrieked, spittle flying from her lips. "I should have put a bullet in your head."
Sam intercepted her, wrapping his arms around her waist, using his momentum to tackle her to the wooden floor of the stage. Nicole thrashed violently, kicking and screaming, completely losing her mind to the rage and the terror.
"Nicole, stop! Stop it!" Sam yelled, pinning her arms down.
Krenner didn't even flinch. He stood calmly at the podium, looking down at the struggling woman with an expression of profound pity.
"You see?" Krenner said softly into the microphone, his voice echoing over Nicole's screams. "It is a violent bloodline. Just as her father brought destruction to the world, she seeks to bring it here to you. I can only assume that is what she meant to do by secretly bringing a trainload of infected subjects into the very bowels of this base."
The crowd froze.
"A what?"
a man in the third row yelled, his voice cracking with terror.
"A trainload of zombies," Krenner said clearly, "parked in the lower mine shafts, hundreds of them, brought directly into your home."
"You asked for them,"
Nicole screamed, sobbing now, fighting weakly against Sam's grip on the floor.
"You told me you needed them for the vaccine. You said you wouldn't work without them."
Krenner looked down at her.
"Ah," he said smoothly. "This is the first truthful thing she has said. She admits she brought the monsters into the mountain, and she admits she held a gun to my head."
"Is it true?"
Sam demanded, looking down at Nicole, his face pale with horror.
"Nicole, did you bring a train of infected into the base?"
Nicole looked up at Sam, tears streaming through the dirt on her face. She saw the absolute devastation in his eyes. She had lied to him. She had endangered them all. She had no defense.
"I had to, Sam," she choked out. "He made me." "While we were bleeding to clear the valley," Carson roared into the microphone, seizing the moment of absolute vulnerability. "While your husbands and sons were building walls to keep you safe, she was opening the back door and inviting the devil inside."
The crowd broke. It was a riot of fear and fury. People were screaming, surging toward the stage.
"Murderer! Traitor! Lock her up!"
"We cannot allow this,"
Carson yelled over the chaos, taking command of the room.
"For the safety of every man, woman, and child in this settlement, Nicole Bennett must be held in confinement until we can learn the absolute truth."
Carson raised his hand, signaling the back of the room. Big Jim and Kale rushed onto the stage. They grabbed Nicole by the arms, hauling her roughly to her feet. She didn't fight them anymore. The fight had burned out of her, leaving only ashes.
"Wait!"
Sam yelled, stepping in front of Big Jim, throwing his hands up.
"Hold on! We can't just... We need to figure this out! We need a trial!"
Carson stepped out from behind the podium and put a heavy, firm hand on Sam's shoulder.
"Sam?"
Carson said, his voice loud enough for the first few rows to hear, projecting strength and sorrow.
"Look at your people! Look at how terrified they are!"
Sam looked at the crowd. They were furious, frightened, screaming for Nicole's head.
"They need to feel confident that their leaders are looking out for their safety," Carson said, squeezing Sam's shoulder tight. "They are looking to you, Sam. You built the valley. Protect it."
Sam looked back at his core group. Paul was staring at the floor, shaking his head in disbelief. Ruby had covered her face with her hands, weeping silently. Beverly had pulled Tommy into her chest, shielding his eyes from the stage. The revelations were too massive. Colonel Bennett, the train, the hostage. They were paralyzed by the sheer weight of her deceit. They could mount no defense. Sam lowered his arms, stepping aside. Nicole looked at him as Big Jim and Kale dragged her toward the stage stairs. Her eyes were empty, devoid of hope, devoid of light. She had tried to carry the sins of her father on her own shoulders, and the weight had finally crushed her. As she was led away, descending into the angry, screaming sea of the people she had sacrificed everything to save, Nicole Bennett realized, with absolute certainty, that all was lost.
Human. Extinction level. Loss.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to Deadland. The outbreak is spreading and we want to hear from you. Leave a voicemail letting us know your weapon of choice, your ultimate survival strategy, or just hit us with your most terrifying zombie impression. We might play it on a future episode. Speak your brains out after the beep.